First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All righty, guys. We talked a little hockey in the first hour with Saad Youssef, covers the Dallas Stars for The Athletic. But I want to get into a little bit more of what we saw over the weekend on the ice, as I guess we knew. Well, no, actually, it waited until we didn't know on Friday, because Friday night was when it closed out. I thought for a second I did my show having already known what the Eastern Conference Finals was, but no. Friday night, it ends in Toronto as Florida wins 3-2 in overtime, beating the Maple Leafs and eliminating Toronto in five. Belmer, you were watching a little bit on Friday night, weren't you?
I did. I watched the end of that Knicks Heat series, and then I flipped over and got the overtime.
Overtime
awesome.
Playoff hockey is pretty fun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
You know, I always think that every shot's going in.
I didn't quite understand everything that was happening, but it was fun to watch.
Fun to watch. Nick Cousins is your hero in overtime for the Cats as they advance and defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, I got to give, like, at the end of the day, you just have to give the Panthers credit for being better in the big moments in this series than Toronto was, which ultimately is what decided it. I don't think, while it was a five-game series, I don't think I walked away thinking, well, you know, at the end of the day, Florida was just way better. I think Florida won overtime games in games 3 and 5, and I think that Florida got really good goaltending from Sergei Bobrovsky. And I think that Florida played very well on the road, winning 3 road games. They won a 1-goal game in game 2, a 2-goal game in game 1. So these games were all close. And, I guess for Toronto, while they got over that hurdle of getting out of the first round, there was still a little bit to be desired. Austin Matthews didn't score in this series, okay? He's their number one A-lister. And Willie Nylander started to play better as the series wore on. Mitch Marner, you know, you saw some flashes. But it was a perplexing series from most of Toronto's forwards. And I think that Florida took advantage of the fact that the door was open. I mean, Florida needed to play its best, and I think did. Because the thing was, in this series, Toronto had the Leafs not had their best, but also if Florida wasn't at their best, Toronto probably still wins. But the door was ajar for the Panthers, and they took advantage with good goaltending and timely goal scoring. So they are moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. And it's funny, the weekend began with the elimination of a Canadian team, and it ended with the elimination of a Canadian team. Belmar, do we have the Canadian anthem? Let's play it. If we have any friends who are grieving next door to the north, as it is another year in which...
Do I have to stand up and put my hand over my heart?
No, you do not. Neither one of us are native Canadians, but 30 years now, our neighbors to the north, the true north, strong and free, have not won the Stanley Cup. And I understand that there's 32 teams and 25 of them are stateside, but they still have 7 teams up there, and they can't win the cup. And the funniest thing about this is that they puff their chests out so much about, oh, hockey's our game in Canada. It's hockey, maple syrup, poutine, Molson's, and Labatt Blue beer, and this is just what we do in Canada, yet we cannot win the biggest prize in the sport. And I'm sure a lot of Canadians, if we have any Canadians listening, are probably like, well, yeah, but like, you guys get all your players on the American teams, they're all Canadian. And first off, the United States, the last 10 years, has made a lot of progress on the national front there. So you guys might call it your game, but the gap is shrinking drastically in terms of the nationalities and the divide there. I mean, hockey's a very global game. Not only is it just the Canadians and the Americans, but go across the pond to Europe and you'll find great players in Sweden, great players in Finland, great players in the Czech Republic. So, anyway, I suppose I should say the score. Vegas 5, Edmonton 2, as Edmonton is the final exit from the Canadian pool of teams this year. And it did look like, for just a second there, could we get a dream, for the Canadians at least, a dream Stanley Cup final and get Edmonton against Toronto? And we did not. Both teams lost over the weekend. It would have been great, I think, in some ways for the league because there's so much star power with those two rosters. But Vegas won this series because they were mentally tougher, they were deeper, and I think more battle-tested. I know that Edmonton got to the Western Conference Final last year, but got swept by Colorado. And I think this year, you saw Vegas really be able to handle the punches better from Edmonton than Edmonton handling the punches that Vegas threw in this series. As last night, there was a flurry of goals in the beginning of the game. I think it was like three in the first 3 minutes or something. And Edmonton takes a 2-1 lead, and Vegas didn't really seem at all rattled. That didn't snowball. By the way, 4-3, I stand corrected, is the final. No, that's the wrong game. I thought it was 5-2. Yeah, 5-2 is the final last night. And three goals in the first 2:43, and Edmonton's up 2-1. You're thinking, okay, great crowd there in Alberta. They've been good at home. And then in the second period, Jonathan Marchessault gets a natural hat trick, which if you're not familiar with that terminology, it's when you score three, the same guy gets three straight goals in the game. So the score went from 2-1 Edmonton to 4-2 Vegas on the heels of three goals from Marchessault, who was one of the original Knights back in the expansion draft in 2017. And here they are in the Western Conference Finals. William Karlsson gets the empty netter in the final minute of regulation. And the Knights advance. And they deserved it. They were better. Edmonton, it's the same thing almost where they have to figure out what it is that's missing around Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. I think there are other players. Like, it's not fair to label the roster as just McDavid and Draisaitl. Evan Bouchard's a very good defenseman. You know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is a nice player. But, gosh, they can never put an adequate goaltender between the pipes there. Stuart Skinner got pulled a couple times in this series. And it was another, you know, if you don't have a good goaltender, like, you just cannot win slugfests time and time again in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So, I don't know how they fix their goaltending woes in Edmonton, but that has to get taken care of. Vegas, on the other hand, I think may well be the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. I haven't looked at the gambling odds, but the Knights are very formidable. And we shall see if they can dot the I's and cross the T's. Still got 8 wins to get, but we'll see, obviously, who's next. Gosh, wouldn't it be something if Seattle won tonight and you get a West Final of Seattle and Vegas? In a lot of ways, that might be really juicy for the National Hockey League in terms of growing the game. Because, you know, Belmar, I'll bring you in here because you're a native Houstonian, and you've said if you can get a team in Houston, you would get behind them.
Because, I'd be all in.
You
know,
you'd
yeah.
love to have a hockey team here, and you just never really had one to root for growing up. And what a message this sends to markets that don't have hockey teams. And listen, it sounds like Commissioner Bettman is pretty content with the 32 that they have right now and not expanding beyond that. But I think in a lot of ways, this is kind of a cool message that you see both of these teams. Vegas, the first year, was right away in the Stanley Cup final and good, and they've never really been bad. And Seattle now in the second year, even if they lose tonight, you win a series in the second round, that has to be, like, the NHL needs to feel validated in exploring these markets that never had hockey to begin with, because you're seeing this instant success. And, you know, to your point, whether it's Houston or somewhere else, if there is plans for a 33rd team or whatever, I just think when you see these teams having early success, it has to kind of stoke those flames a little bit more of like, hey, we might, why not, why stop?
I mean, it doesn't mean you're always going to get that, but if you get the team and you do have that early success, it sort of anchors that team in that city,
right,
and gives you that starting base.
I don't think, and this is why I'm like a little disappointed, obviously, even though like I get the allure of Vegas, the A's going there, yeah, and being the third team there, because that's what I think they'll always be. I don't think the Knights are ever going to be, like, there's never going to be a low appetite for hockey now in Vegas, because they were the first ones there and they've been good right away. And football's football. You know, the appetite for football is massive in this country. And so the Raiders get there next. I honestly think that the glitz and glamour of Vegas, the A's might not be able to experience as much of the high end of that, because it's still not a massive market. I don't know that it can support four teams, and you already have two there. And the hockey team's thriving, and the football team, it's football.
Yeah, WNBA too there.
They do. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that to an extent, maybe the NBA, and we'll see how the A's do, but they already kind of lost the Vegas battle. And Seattle's a little more interesting, because we've seen great crowds in Seattle for Seahawks games and the 12th man, and you know, the Sonics certainly seemed to have a good relationship with the town before they left, and that was sad. And the Mariners, when they had Griffey and Edgar Martinez. So I think Seattle is actually like a pretty good sports town in general, and the fact that they are having this kind of early success with the Kraken is also pretty cool. So if Seattle wins the game tonight, Seattle and Vegas is your West Final, pat yourself on the back, Gary Bettman. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back. I hate that we have to do this, but we have to talk a little more Ja Morant. That's coming up on the other side. First Team Sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, we are back on a Monday afternoon. You know, one of the more disappointing stories from the weekend emerged from the social media sphere yesterday. And I think while there are some good things about social media, if you can keep it lighthearted, not get too serious and, you know, mad at people behind the screen, you can have some fun interacting and engaging. I'm not a big Instagrammer, but I like Twitter from that perspective. Like, it's a good way to have quick takes on sports or food or movies, whatever your cup of tea is. And, you know, I think it's funny, like, I've kind of associated Facebook with more of like the family social network. It's like that third cousin or like that distant aunt that like you don't see, who throws a like on your, you know, family picture from your vacation or your, you know, your graduation. Like, that's kind of like the Facebook vibes. Well, I don't know why it is, but Ja Morant, for the second time now on Instagram Live, seen showing off a gun. And he got suspended, what was it, 8 games, the first one?
I believe so, yeah.
So he got 8 games, and it felt like was rehabilitating himself, comes back, had a couple of good games in the playoffs too. And then we see this video come out over the weekend of Morant doing the same thing. And, you know, I am not one to tout this take. We were talking a little bit in show prep about how, you know, there have been some people saying, oh, well, you know, it's a Second Amendment right, and what is he doing wrong? You might disagree with it, but, you know, why should he be suspended? Like, we hold athletes to higher behavioral standards because they're supposed to be role models, I think. Or at least, unfortunately, I think reasons like this are why you can't look at athletes as role models. Because they make too many dumb decisions, and they don't portray off-court or off-the-field behavior that is worth emulating. I mean, seriously, it really just comes down to that for me. Where is the benefit, if you're Ja Morant, to going on social media and showing off a gun? Like, I don't get how his thought process is like, oh, this will be like a good thing for me to do. Like, I'll come out of this better than before I do it. It just feels like there's such a high degree of immaturity here with this guy to where, you know, whatever happens to him, first off, don't read into the fact that he's suspended from all team activities for a team that isn't in the playoffs in the middle of May. Like, what are those activities? Like, I wouldn't really read into that at all. But athletes should be held to higher standards from a decorum, how they act standard, because they're getting paid millions of dollars to play a game. So is it crazy to assume that with that, like, that's a privilege in and of itself? So with that should come a little bit more of an expectation that you're going to, I don't know, not be an idiot and, like, set a bit of an example and not be dumb. So, yeah, like, I'm not in lockstep with the, well, you know, it's a Second Amendment right. It's like, what has he done wrong? You know, it just feels like whether it's a gun or some other weapon or, you know, if he's on a drinking binge and broadcasting that, like, all things that you probably just shouldn't be putting out there. And that's the big thing that I have as a problem sign here if I was the NBA, if I was the Memphis Grizzlies, is that one of my seemingly budding superstars, right? I mean, it's Ja Morant, it's Luka Doncic, it's Jason Tatum. You know, pretty soon it'll be Victor Wembanyama. You know, all these guys that are the younger next wave of faces in the NBA, Morant is at the forefront of that conversation. And just seems like he's an idiot. And doesn't appear to have learned a whole lot. So that's the big thing for me. Like, I'm not, I just think the lack of thought, of premeditation, of thinking to yourself, should I be doing this, is a sign that this guy is pretty immature. And Belmer and I were talking about it in show prep. You have to fix this if you're the Memphis Grizzlies. Because let's just talk about the basketball team for a second. The Memphis Grizzlies really don't have a path under the current roster construction to winning an NBA championship if they can't fix Ja Morant. Memphis is not the biggest of markets. It's not a big-time free agent destination. They got Morant in the draft, second overall in 2019, and I think the Grizzlies deserve a lot of credit for how they've been able to build out their roster since acquiring Morant. Guys like Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson, he's not going to be there anymore, but Dylan Brooks. Like, all of this core, they found either with good drafting or cheap contracts, like doing things that they needed to do. Now, it's one thing to say under no circumstances will Dylan Brooks be back because of his antics in the series against the Lakers and going back and forth with LeBron, not a good idea. Like, seems to be a very big problem for their locker room. But we can also, you can also move on from losing Devin Brooks, or excuse me, Dylan Brooks, a lot more than you could if you're going to move past Ja Morant. And that's why you have to fix this if you're the Grizzlies. Because if you deem him unfixable and you are to try and trade him to a team that wants to try and rehabilitate him or whatever, as the Memphis Grizzlies, I don't know how you get better from that. Because I can almost guarantee you that any player you get back in a trade for him is not going to be as good as Ja Morant when Ja Morant is engaged on the court and playing basketball. So then it becomes a question of, well, how do I find another player like that? And when you're not a top free agent destination, like, it just gets a lot harder. They got Morant at the top of the draft, which is how you have to do it if you're a smaller market. So, but then you need it to work out from there. Okay? You look at some of the other small markets in the NBA that have had success. Chief among them, recently, the Milwaukee Bucks winning an NBA championship. Drafted Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. Like, this is how it has to go. And so, there really isn't... I don't see an alternative here for the Grizzlies. I like, you just have to figure this out and figure out and have a conversation and be like, dude, like, come on. Like, that's strike two now. It'll be interesting to see where we go from here. I mean, if the first one was 8 games, are we talking about the guy missing 20 or something next season? That's almost a quarter of the season. And what did we just talk about earlier in the show about how, well, you know, the Warriors didn't really seem like a championship team this year? Well, because in part the cluster in the West, like, teams are so jumbled up. Well, if that's the case next year and you don't have Morant for a quarter of the season, you're not going to be the 2 seed again in the West. Like, your path is, if you even make the playoffs, your path is going to get a lot harder. So it's just a disappointing story that we're doing again. And how many more chances do you get the guy? I mean, because on one hand, you do need this to work out if you're the Grizzlies. But on another hand, like, there's got to be some line that you draw. At some point, you have to say, yeah, like, we can't do this anymore. And I'm not saying we've reached that point yet. The dude better grow up. I mean, he better just figure it out. Because, honestly, what else do you say other than, what are you doing, dude?
I know it's a little bit different. It's not apples to apples, but it reminds me a lot of the Josh Gordon with the marijuana situation.
You know,
in
it's
the
a
NFL.
Great point. And he never really figured it out.
Nope.
And to that end, Josh Gordon with the Cleveland Browns had, I think it was the 2013 season, back-to-back games of 200 yards receiving with garbage quarterbacks. It was insane how good he was. And you do worry a little bit about going down that same kind of wasted talent path with John Morant. We'll take a timeout. And thought about this a little bit yesterday. Like, do we care too much about sports sometimes? Because yesterday was a real crummy day for me. I'll get into that a little bit more on the other side. Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News joins to recap the Sixers season in 15 minutes.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, yesterday ended up being one of those days where I just, by the end of it, was like, what was that? What was I doing with myself? Why did I care this much? And it's not the first time that one of those days is happened, and it won't be the last, but I woke up yesterday pretty fired up. I'll even go back to Saturday. I called my mom on Saturday to wish her a happy Mother's Day because I knew that every Sunday my parents have a Zoom call with my sister in London, and they usually do it in the late afternoon Eastern Standard Time, where they live in southern New Jersey, which is usually fast forward to UK time just prior to my sister going to bed for a Sunday evening. And so I knew that around the time that they were going to be Zooming with my sister, and there have been times when I've joined the Zoom if it was like a holiday or something that I wasn't back for and just checked in with them. And that was what we were going to do to last year we did that, and I jumped on to give our mom the Mother's Day gift that we got for her. But I knew that that Zoom call was going to be taking place during the Sixers and Celtics game 7. And so, I mean, I had to call my mom, and I said, hey, you know, I wished her a happy Mother's Day one day in advance. And I know I wasn't the only person that did this. I'm sure there were both Sixers and Celtics fans on Saturday, or maybe on Sunday morning, that were getting their Mother's Day obligations and phone calls, Zoom calls, text, whatever, out to their moms so that they could watch the game. But when you're on the losing side of that, it did make me wonder. I started drinking yesterday, probably an hour and a half before the game. Wanted to, you know, get fired up. Went for my run. And started contacting some different friends about their plans were who was doing what, where we were watching the game. And then I'm watching the game thinking, I did all of this to watch the Sixers get clobbered. And at that point, by the time the game was over, I'm like, well, I'm already 5-6 beers deep, probably more. Let's keep it going. A couple Long Island iced teas, you know, had pretty good buzz going by 7 o'clock last night. Now, fortunately, it was spread out over the course of the entire day, so I don't have this brutal hangover or something today, which has happened to me before when you know, drink too much in a confined, like, night 3-hour period of time or something, then you wake up the next morning feeling horrible. But my answer will always be no, as to if you care too much about sports, because you should care about whatever brings you joy in life, okay? And I've always said this when people say to me, well, like, what? You care too much about sports. Like, do something else. It's like, well, what do you care about? Like, you're spending all your time reading, like, Hollywood gossip, or, you know, you're into politics, or, you know, you're into different, you know, what are you, like, gardening or whatever your hobby is. Like, that's stupid. You know, like, I think that's dumb. So I'll just do the same thing. So my answer will always be no, but I suppose the difference between some of those other things I mentioned is that those things, the happiness through which your own like personal venture might be, that what you do with your free time, is not result driven. Meaning you can plant your garden or whatever, or you know maybe you're a you like to you know knit or something, and like you're like that's like very like old person thing, but like you catch my drift. There's different hobbies that people have where you know you're going to finish the thing. Like, you know that you're going to have your garden, and eventually it's going to rain, or you're going to water the garden, and whatever you planted will bloom and grow, and you'll have your garden. You don't know if your sports teams are going to win. You don't control that, which you may argue is the beauty in it, is that it is the unknown gratification that keeps you coming back. Because sooner or later, you'll get there, and then you'll remember all the wasted drinks you had and the bar tabs that were too expensive for your team to get smoked, because it's awesome when you win. And that's all part of the fun for me, but gosh, those lows really suck. And as I said, even after game 6, I said to myself, you know, I've always felt watching the Sixers over the course of the regular season and in this series even, that there was a little bit of a different vibe here. Like, it makes sense for this to be the year that they finally get out of the second round and get back to the conference finals. So I, like, woke up pretty confident yesterday. And for there to be no, again, line in the sand drawn by Embiid to say, I'm the MVP, enough with this garbage that was the third quarter, it's just very damning to me for really his legacy as someone that has not been to a conference finals. Now, I will add that it does take a long time for some, even LeBron James, okay, who is widely billed as the second greatest basketball player of all time, didn't win his first championship until his 9th season, I think it was, in 2012. With the Heat, his first overall pick in 2003. Dirk Nowitzki took him a while to win. with the Mavs. I guess Giannis was 8 years after he was drafted. He won. So it doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, I hate this, but it always comes up. Anytime the Sixers lose, people are like, well, how's your process doing now? It's like, yeah, because things were so great when the best player on the Sixers was like Andre Iguodala or Lou Williams. And it was like, oh, well, maybe we might win one game in the first round. Isn't that awesome? So but there's nothing we can do if you're a processor, you know, and I was in on the whole thing. There's nothing you can do except take it when you have a game like that yesterday. It's like you're the, you ever go to like the, you don't even need to go to it to see it. At the circus, those dunk tanks where like you're just sitting on the tank. And the people that were anti-process and thought that Sam Hinkie was a joke or whatever are throwing the ball at the arrow, and you're just waiting for them to hit the bullseye so that you can get dunked. Like, that's what the feeling was yesterday. And so it just made me think to myself, why do I even waste my time? Like, why do I care so much? And again, I'll never bring myself to break up with, like, these four teams for me are like the four kids I don't have. Like, I can't, like, quit caring about them. But...
Well, you're invested.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing.
No, I don't think so.
It just is a real crummy feeling when you get that invested for a game. Like, I was waiting at the end of the night. I'm sitting outside my buddy's apartment, probably like 10:30 last night. And I'm waiting for my Lyft. And somebody else just, like, rolls his window down and just goes, ha, 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 ha. And, like, because I have my Sixers gear on. Like, I get it. Like, they deserve to be laughed at. Like, it just sucks. And
it's because you're helpless. There's nothing you can
right.
do. You know?
But the thing is, you try and liven up the experience because I'm a very social person, okay? And I think that's one of the cool things about sports is that, and it's a way to bring other people into sports. More casuals or people that maybe don't like sports at all, if they like to go out, have a good time, drink a few beers or, you know, hang out with people, and that can be that social experience that sports provide a lot of people can be a way to get more people into sports, which I think is cool. And so I like to play up the bigger games, doing a little bit more. And that yesterday was one of those days. And when it tanks like that, and when you just get bombarded by the opponent, it's like, geez, I would have been better just, you know, hanging out on the Zoom call with the game on in the background.
Yeah, but if you'd have been on the Zoom call and the game on in the background and them winning, you'd been losing your mind.
Yeah, you're right. There's another side of it. But you get what I'm saying sometimes when you have those big days planned and then it goes completely in the opposite direction of what you were expecting, you look yourself in the mirror and be like, what the hell was that? Like,
yep.
what was even the point of that?
I felt that exact way when the Chiefs and the Texans played the 24-0 comeback. That's the exact same way I felt.
Yeah. Sucks. But relatable for those that are into sports like I am. Keith Pompey on the other side to wrap up the show, as Keith's a great Sixers writer, has been covering the team for a while. And what's next? James Harden, Doc Rivers, and everything for the Sixers. That's up to wrap things up on the other side. First Name Sports, SportsMap Radio.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Well, a large portion of today's show has been centered around eulogizing the 2022-2023 Philadelphia 76ers as their season ends yesterday in Boston with a 112-88 defeat at the hands of the Boston Celtics. And to complete that eulogy and talk a little bit about what's next for the Sixers, we bring on a guy who's always good to us here at SportsMap Radio, Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News, kind enough to join us and talk more about the end of the Sixers season. Keith, good to have you aboard again. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to speak with you. So, simply put, what happened to the Sixers yesterday in the third quarter?
I mean, I think they choked, to be honest with you. I mean, you knew that Jason Tatum was going to come out. I mean, he was having his best game of the series, even in the first half. And you knew that he was going to come out on fire in a vengeance, trying to put him away. And I just felt like the Sixers did not match their energy. And I felt like you saw some, I didn't feel like I saw some bad body language. And I just felt like they just, you know, it's quit, man. I mean, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, I mean, I felt like they quit in that third quarter.
Yeah, and I think that's what's really disappointing for the Sixers as we pick up the pieces from their exit. I think at the beginning of the series, a lot of people probably looked at it and said, yeah, Boston's just a better team. Boston will probably win this thing. And Boston won, but I don't think for most of the series they were clearly better. I think this ended up being two even teams, and one choked and one didn't, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And not only that, like, you look at it, like, you know, the 76ers, you said, like, they did the first game, they came out there and they stole the game. And then, you know, they had Boston on its ropes. And, like, you know, Jason Tatum wasn't really playing particularly well. Al Horford was extremely inconsistent, but trending on the bad side for the most part. And, you know, you look at it and you say, like, the Sixers had every opportunity to upset and win this thing. And I think, you know, that's why it's so disappointing because, yes, Boston was the higher seed. But at the same time, like, they kept opening up the door for the 76ers to get victories. And they just couldn't close the deal.
Yeah, no, it was there to be had, and they didn't capitalize. And, Keith, I feel like it's probably the most embarrassing moment of Joel Embiid's career yesterday, because I felt like in various portions of his career, when you looked at some of the other playoff exits, you could have pointed to, well, some bad luck, Kawhi Leonard shot, or Siakam hits him in the face last year in the first round, and then he's got to play with a mask after missing the first couple games against Miami. You knew that James Harden and Doc Rivers were always capable of letting you down like this, and I think some people were still confident despite that because you had the MVP, and he never drew the line in the sand yesterday and said enough. I think that was pretty embarrassing for Embiid, right?
Yeah, I think it was bad for him, but also he was I'm like on the fence with him. Now again, he could have played better. I wish that he would have been more on the post, like, you know, doing certain things as opposed to being out in the perimeter. And I know that's his game, but I felt like certain games need you to be down there and attack and, you know, do what you can. You know, the thing is, but when I looked at Joel, I also looked at him as a guy who was playing with a sprained, knee, a sprained right knee, and also a guy who was, like, gassed. And I think that missing that time and not working out, not practicing, while his knee, it came back to hurt him. It haunted him in that game. But you are right. Like, the optics didn't look good. It wasn't one of his better games at all. You know, because we're used to him going down with a fight, and he really didn't fight that hard.
Yeah, no, I agree. So as we pick up the pieces now, obviously, I mentioned Harden and Rivers. Those are the two individuals who we ask the most questions about with regard to the futures of each one of them. Let's start with the coach. Do you expect Doc Rivers back next season?
You know, that's a good question. You know, everyone keeps saying no, and you know, we're sitting here, we're waiting for him to get fired, right? I mean, your expectation is that he will, but I wouldn't be shocked if they kept him. Like, I expect him to be fired, but I wouldn't be shocked if they kept him. You know, based off of, you know, he has 2 years left on his deal for $16 million. And, you know, the owner just bought the Eagles. I mean, not the Eagles, excuse me, the Washington team, formerly known as the Redskins, the Commanders. So it's one of those things where you're looking at it and you're saying, you know, maybe this might not be the right year to get rid of the coach, right, if you think that you can win with him. So I do expect it, but I wouldn't be shocked if he left.
And as for James Harden, I mean, it's wildly been known and widely reported that, you know, that there is that affinity for Houston and a return there. But he does have a pretty expensive option if he wants to exercise and opt in to the final year of his contract for 23-24. Just your thoughts on what's going through James' head.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, you know, he has an expensive option, you know, upwards of like $37 million. And it's one of those things where you look at it and you saw how he played the last game, and what's the market going to be like? You know, the thing is, like, yes, Houston does have the money, but is Houston going to be willing, you know, to give him, you know, multiple years at that type of pay. You know what I mean? That he thinks he's deserved. But or, you know, you look at it like he says, you know, he wants to play for a championship team. You look at the Sixers and you say to yourself, the Sixers are further along than the Rockets are. And if they can make some tweaks to it, and then he could win a title. But I also think that, you know, James is in the later stages of his career. He's looking to get his final contract. So he's going to go, if the money is right, he's going to go where the money's at.
Right.
Right? And then he has an affinity for Houston. That's his town. That's where he lives. So, you know, I think that the Sixers could lose him, but I think in order for the Sixers to keep him, they're going to have to give him the money that he feels like he deserves.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, just to follow up on that, Houston's been the team out there, if it's not the Sixers. Do you think he's on one of those two rosters next year, or maybe could there be another contender that says, hey, we think we have enough in place already to take on James Harden?
No, I think he's one of those two. And the thing is, you know how you notice sometimes, like with James Harden, and I'm not speaking for him, I'm just, like, I'm not, like, breaking any news or anything, but I'm thinking what he's going through. It's kind of like, you know, you realize the grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Yeah.
Like, in Houston, he was the man. And
right.
Then he goes to Brooklyn, he's in that mess. Now he's with the Sixers, and it's kind of sort of like they want him to reinvent himself and not be the James Harden that he's known to be. So sometimes it's best to go back home where you got friends and you love Houston, is, you know, and you just be the guy there.
Right.
I mean, let's say he's going to be a Hall of Fame.
For sure.
So it's nice to be comfortable.
Yeah. Last one for you, Keith. Back on Doc for a second. I said earlier in my show today that I don't know if he is fired by the Sixers if he coaches in the NBA again, because I don't know why he would want to go to a rebuilding situation or what team that would be rebuilding would hire him. And then if you're a contending team looking to hire a coach, you've seen the book on this guy for the last decade, and I don't know why you would hire him. So do you think if the Sixers do part ways with Doc Rivers that his time as an NBA head coach would be over?
You know, I never say never, because there's always some team that's willing to give somebody, you know, hey, well, we need to get Doc Rivers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We need to get a coach a chance. But, you know, my question is, like, would he want to coach again? I mean, just because, I mean, Doc has made so much money as a coach.
Yeah.
You know, this is his 24th year in the NBA. He was a player for 13 years. So we're talking about more than half his life. He was, you know, affiliated with the league. So, you know, I don't know. He's got grandbabies, the whole nine.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to ride off in the sunset if he is going. And then let's face it, like you said, he's been on contending teams that always had all-stars, right?
Right.
All-stars. Does Doc Rivers, does he want to go to a rebuild and develop young players and do stuff knowing that they're not going to make the playoffs? So, like, it's one of those things where, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he was let go, that he rode off in the sunset and had 2 years to collect his money.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see it as well. There he is, Keith Pompey, Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. Always good talking Sixers with Keith. Follow him on Twitter, at Pompey on Sixers. Keith, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, man.
All right. So that'll about wrap things up. And, you know, Belmer, like we're saying, I guess given our luck, Doc Rivers is going to get fired in 10 minutes, right?
That's right.
Always the news always breaks right when we get off the air. So we shall see what his future like. Well, certainly I think whether it's today or tomorrow, no, because if he's not fired by tomorrow, that would make me think that the Sixers are going to try and maybe even run the whole thing back. And I know that would have a lot of people pissed off, but we'll just have to see what the plan is for Daryl Morey and company. That'll wrap things up for us here on a Monday afternoon. Mean Gene is up on the other side with Sports Kings. I'm back tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central. John Belmar, our producer. My name is Greg Frank, bidding you all a friendly farewell. This has been First Name Sports, signing off on the Sports Map Radio Network.